where Southern Colorado comes to talk the world's game. It's The Other Football Show with Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden, presented by Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC on Extra Sports 1300.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of The Other Football Show here on Extra Sports 1300. Ryan Kaufman flying solo with you this morning. It's game day, Trailheads. How you feeling about the Switchbacks taking on San Antonio FC, one of the only teams that has really held serve with San Antonio has been the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Should bode well for tonight, we would certainly hope. Coming up in the next segment, you will hear from the skipper, Ronnie Argueta, to talk about what it's going to take for the Switchbacks to get a win tonight. Reminder, gates open at 6. Kickoff is at 7. SwitchbacksFC.com. Best place to go and get your tickets prior to the match tonight. Plus, there'll be fireworks after, which is certainly something worth checking out in and of itself. Actually, a couple of fireworks games coming up in the next couple weeks for the Switchbacks. So again, SwitchbacksFC.com is the place to go. Big match, be the difference, be the 12th man for the Switchbacks. So I mentioned Ronnie Argueta. You will hear from him in just a few minutes. Also, Paul Pogba releasing a Pog Pillow. I'll tell you some other soccer stars that are releasing some not normal merchandise and products. Not a great tease, but it'll be a lot of fun. Also, a couple of matches going on in the Confed Cup. Today, we will preview those as well. But we start today, as we start every Saturday, with the top four.
Scanning the globe for the four biggest stories in the world of soccer. It's time for Ryan and Chris's Top 4. Top of the morning
to you. All right, first up, speaking of the Confed Cup, that's actually where we're going to start and finish today. Germany, thanks to Lars Stindl's late equalizer, is able to get a draw out of their match with Chile. And now Chile and Germany are tied atop Group B. Mexico and Portugal have grabbed control of Group A. Both of those teams will play today. The significance of this win is it really vindicates what Joachim Löw is doing with this German side. Now he's taken a lot of heat for the squad that he has chosen for the Confederations Cup. A lot of people, in fact, I watched Steve Nichol on ESPN the other day say as much, that this is a, however you want to slice it, JV squad, B squad, whatever you want to call it, Germany is bringing the lesser-known guys over to the Confed Cup. And here they are against their main competition in the group, and they get a draw. And I think they overall, they played extremely well. Talent for talent, they looked outmatched, but they didn't end up being outmatched. And so I think it vindicates what Germany chose to do with this Confederations Cup. Now they could fall on their face, but for now they look like they're in a position to really prove the doubters wrong. One of the guys, oddly enough, that criticized Germany for the squad that they're bringing in is the dude that heads up Russia's World Cup organizing group that said that, which is just, of course you know this, further proof that Russia just can't help but interfere with things they shouldn't interfere in. Political joke on a Saturday, how about that? Look, I don't know if they can beat Ronaldo, but from what I saw yesterday, why can't they beat Mexico? And why can't they beat Chile if they happen to meet up with them again? And what this continues to do for Germany is just add another feather in their cap of what has been just a tremendous calendar year for them in the growth of German football. We all knew that Germany is really good. We know going into the World Cup, that's one of the teams that you're going to have to go through if you want to win a World Cup, or if you want to win an Olympics, or really, if you want to even win. They're doing very well in the U21s, I believe, is going on right now. So we know on the international stage, the German national teams, women and men alike, are formidable. But over the past year, we have seen signs that German football has maybe become something more important than really good. They've become popular. Last year, FIFA comes out, Bundesliga player on it. The best player for the U.S. men's national team plays in the Bundesliga. One of their other key players in Bobby Wood plays in the Bundesliga. And trust me, if you want to grow your brand, getting Americans in on your brand is vitally important. And there are more and more American soccer fans that are gravitating towards the Bundesliga because two of the best teams on their players on their national team are playing in the Bundesliga right now. Then you have, like I said, you have the FIFA 17 with Marco Reus on the cover, and now you have Fox Sports throwing their lot in with the Bundesliga and saying NBC's got the Premier League. We're not going to go La Liga. We're not going to go Serie A. We're going to go with the Bundesliga. So that is significant. It is significant when the Bundesliga is now the other European league that is being beamed into American homes. Some other ancillary stuff. In Germany themselves, just to talk about how big German soccer has become. Europe, obviously much easier to travel around Europe, to come from France, from England, from Russia, and other places to come into Germany to watch football. Bundesliga, Bundesliga 2, both setting massive attendance records this season. People want to watch the German Bundesliga. And on the digital platform, their YouTube channel has broken a million subscribers. And some of you may be listening and saying, okay, so what? My wife has somebody that shows her how to apply makeup that has like 999,999 followers. But all of this together just shows that I don't know if they'll ever knock off the Premier League, because we're not native German speakers. And at times, I don't even believe we speak the same language as they do over in England. It's very difficult for anybody in America, or even in, I would say, perhaps even most of Europe, to knock off the Premier League. Now, do we believe that the Premier League is actually the best league? No, I think that the Bundesliga is staking that claim. But in terms of popularity, especially if a certain Spanish, or he's from Portugal but plays in Spain, decides to actually follow through and force a move to potentially the Premier League, I don't know that the Bundesliga can ever surpass the Premier League in terms of popularity, both here stateside and with a lot of countries abroad. But it just continues to show the growth of German soccer across the world. Their style of play, their clubs, their players are starting to appeal to a wider and wider audience. And we just saw it this past year in Colorado Springs. Mainz 05, one of the smaller clubs in the Bundesliga, coming here to the United States. And that was really cool, right? I bet you a few of you listening are now converted Mainz fans, or at least pull for them and follow them because they came to Colorado Springs. Maybe your kid competed in one of their camps they had at the Air Force Academy. But that's what the Bundesliga is doing as a whole. It's not just Mainz. It's other clubs within the Bundesliga are now starting to do what the big clubs in England and France and Italy are doing, and that's planning American trips for the off season to grow their brand. So, again, all of this is a confluence of events that are just boosting the profile and the popularity of German football, and we'll see if they can add to it as this Confederations Cup moves on. Second story today, it's the one that you've been hearing on the promo all week for the show. The International Football Association Board, which is backed by FIFA, they are the people that sit in an office somewhere and they analyze games and they try to figure out what rule changes should be suggested to FIFA. And the most radical, they're doing some other ones where if there is a ball that's traveling towards the goal and it has a clear chance at goal, and even if you're not in the box, you play it with your arm or your hand, that awards a penalty kick. There's some other encroachment type things that are being discussed, but the most radical of proposed changes, and I guess proposed changes is a bit too strong. What it is at this moment is, hey, we got this idea. Why don't you let your debate amongst yourselves and let the soccer community debate it? Moving from a 90-minute running clock, which we know with stoppage time assessed by referees at the end of each half, to a 60-minute, 30-minute halves start-stop clock that will stop every time the ball goes out of play. Now, there are two things that they're hoping to eliminate with this. They cited a game last week. It was actually on this day last week, the opening of the Confederations Cup, New Zealand and Russia. They analyzed and said that there was only 47 minutes of actual gameplay during that 90-minute plus match. Only 47 minutes of actual gameplay. And they have found more examples of this over the last year or so, which has led them to debate this. So they're trying to make sure that for the entirety of while the clock is running, the game is being played. That is one thing that they're hoping to, and that's the main thing that they're looking to eliminate with this, or that they're suggesting this could remedy. The other thing is taking it out of the referee's hands when it comes to stoppage time. If you have a start-stop clock, we see this right in high school. Once the clock runs down, right? Once it says zeros, that's the end of the half. There's no added time going on it. The referees stop the clock for goals, for balls out of play, for injuries, things like that. They stop the clock, and that eliminates the need for them to go back and subjectively add time. And they have some people who have been on the record with saying just how subjective it is. Like, most of them just say, yeah, we'll just do a minute after the end of the first half, 2 minutes after at the end of the game, and then if there's some really big stoppage, then we'll add time as needed. But that's kind of the basics, and it really shouldn't be that. There should be games where you don't have any stoppage time. So those are the two things that this rules committee believes that they will remedy by instituting this 60-minute, 2-30-minute half start-stop clock. Now, when I look at soccer, one of the things that appeals to me, and I think has really led to the growth of the sport here in the United States and abroad, even though abroad they were pretty much already customers. We're the ones that are late arriving to the party. But here in the United States, I think part of the reason why soccer has grown in popularity is, one, that it's the highest participatory sport, or one of the numbers are blowing up in terms of the number of kids who are playing soccer, especially when you start to decide whether you want your kids to play soccer or play football. a lot of people these days are starting to lean towards the game of soccer. But part of the appeal as well is that in our increasingly busy lives, where we bring our work home with us more and more, we have our weekends stacked with things. Just for me, for instance, I'm headed to the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo right after this show is over. And my day is pretty much that all the time. I don't have a lot of time. Now, my job is to watch sports, so, you know, I know you feel bad for me. I have to make time to watch sporting events as part of my gig. But part of the thing that I like about soccer, and I think a lot of people like about soccer, is you could set your watch to it. 2 hours, I'm done. Now, if it's some huge match that needs to be decided on PKs, yes, it can go longer, and many, many do. How many MLS playoff games, how many games on the international stage have been decided on penalty kicks, but a normal game, the Confederations Cup games that are going on there starting at 9 o'clock this morning, you can set your watch 2 hours, I can watch the entire thing. So when you have a 60-minute clock that starts and stops, what are you inviting? You're inviting the same thing that people complain about when it comes to the NBA, right? The ends of games takes too long because they're fouling and they're stalling and doing all these tactics to extend the game. They're calling timeouts, all this kind of stuff. Not saying that soccer would all of a sudden have six timeouts that they can use over the course of the game, but it certainly starts us down that road. But at the very least, you have every time somebody fouls, you're going to stop the clock, obviously. And so now you're going to have guys that are throwing their legs out in front of dudes and trying to trip them up and get a foul to stop the clock. So now you're extending. While you say that you're going to ensure that while the clock is moving, play is going on, which no one can deny, you're also inviting the games to drag on, especially at the end of the game when guys are kicking it out of bounds on purpose, they're fouling people on purpose in order to extend the game even further. So to me, I don't dig this. One, I'm not a fan of fundamentally changing the way a sport is played. I believe that sports have become, in a lot of ways, too perfect to mess with on this kind of level. If you want to, I mean, I don't even think that as much as it's been proven that having like a robo strike zone is the way to go for baseball, I still don't like it. I like the human element. I like an umpire being back there. So I will be very late to that party if that ever does happen where robots are calling balls and strikes. But more than that, I just think a 60-minute clock with that starts and stops is going to fundamentally change the way soccer is played, and therefore I'm not on board. I think that pace of play, like baseball here in the United States, I think pace of play is an issue. Because there are guys that just boot the ball downfield and out of play. And there are guys that are hovering all over an opponent who's trying to pick the ball up and throw it in. So I get that there's a need. 47 minutes out of a 90-minute game is not acceptable when it comes to how much actual game time we are watching, how much the ball is in play. But isn't there a mechanism in place already with what they do with goalkeepers? If you're taking too long to line up your goal kick, you're going to get a yellow. Why don't we embolden referees to do that more? If we know you're delaying the game, in hockey, they call delay games. The referees are allowed to decipher. Now, a lot of it is when the ball goes, the puck, I should say, goes in the stands. Why not do that with soccer? Why not say, oh, that's a delay game yellow? Because yellow card accumulation is something. I mean, it is something that players, that gets them into some trouble, right? How many times do you remember a guy misses a key match because of yellow card accumulation? So I think a weapon you can use is the yellow card. And I'm actually willing to listen to the idea in a situation like that, if the ball is kicked into the stands, although there are ball boys and ball girls that are on the sidelines that will immediately feed you a ball, but I'm not totally opposed to at some points being able to stop the game if you feel necessary. And I don't even know that kicking it out into the stands is one of those times that's warranted. But how about when a dude needs a stretcher? If a dude needs a stretcher, then it's time to stop the clock. That's one time that I say, if you want to stop the clock, I am cool with that. And maybe that leads down the road where it's a start-stop clock, but it's going to take a long time. So not in favor of the idea coming out of this rules committee that FIFA supports. No 60-minute clock for me. Some good news coming out yesterday. The U.S. Women's National Team has regained the top spot in the FIFA rankings. Germany, you remember, knocked them off the perch for the first time since March of 2015. So what has led to this? I think as we go back, the loss in the Olympics to, or the draw against Sweden in the Olympics is going to be a watershed moment, I believe, for U.S. women's soccer. I believe it already has been. I believe you feel this same way. But that is always going to be a point in time reference. Because I think that there's a very different, it marked the end of an era. It sent the U.S. women's national team on a different trajectory, especially in goal, right? So I look back at that match against Sweden in the Olympics, and I look at what happened since then. The schedule was Charmin soft for Joe Kelly's team after that. They played like Thailand and Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, and of course you weren't going to feel the effects of losing Abby Wambach and not having Hope Solo, things like that. You weren't going to feel those effects in those games. But then you go to March, where they lose to England, and they lose, what was the other game? France, that they lost. And then you realize that, oh, like this is where the effects of all of that has come to fruition, has shown itself. But since then, you have an unbeaten team or an undefeated team. They haven't even drawn. They have won four matches in a row, combined score of 11-1. And now you see the young future generation of the U.S. women's national team, the generation that is going to carry us into the next decade or so, starting to pay dividends. We already knew about Mallory Pugh, right? Lindsey Horan, we knew about because she has local ties, but she's starting to be more in the rotation than she used to be. So Lindsey Horan's starting to step more to the forefront. Mallory Pugh's already been there. Now you have these other two players that you may not have known about before, maybe even as soon as right now in the middle of this sentence. You have in goal Alyssa Nahr. She's really starting to grab hold of that job as the successor to Hope Solo. 3-0, hasn't given up a goal. Now, Rose Lavelle came on, very impressive debut in March, but that was about the time that The U.S. Women's National Team hit that two-match slide, so we kind of lost her for a moment. She has come back to the forefront. She scored two goals in the last three matches, including a very cathartic goal against Sweden recently to finally avenge, although you can't fully avenge that loss in the Olympics unless you end up beating them on the world stage. But we'll take it for now, right? Rose Lavelle, a young player, Mallory Pugh, Lindsay Horan, Alyssa Nair. This is the group that is going to lead Jill Ellis's team into the future. And they're back on top. They don't show any signs of slowing down. And as we transition from Solo, Wambach, even Carly Lloyd, to these younger players, I feel really good about the future of the U.S. Women's National Team. And we'll wrap up the top four on a somber note, sticking with the U.S. Women's National Team, though. Tony DiCicco, passing away earlier this week at the age of 68. His family said cancer was the cause. If you remember, he guided the U.S. Women's National Team to the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta and, of course, the 1999 World Cup. Now, the 1999 World Cup was the moment that soccer got on my radar. It entered into my consciousness. 1999, I don't remember the month it was, but I was 13 or 14 at the time. So I was into my sports fandom, but still not so far into it that I wasn't able to, you know, I could have probably picked up soccer earlier. I didn't. 1999 was what put it on the map. I remember exactly where I was because my dad isn't still to this day not a soccer fan, but don't worry, I'm working on him. I was at, my dad had taken me and my brothers to John Elway's Celebrity Golf Tournament. This is ones he used to throw every year in Denver, a bunch of NFL players, a couple of soap opera stars, few ex-NBA players would show up, they'd golf, sign autographs, all that kind of stuff. And I remember standing in line to get Mario Lemieux's signature or something like that. Forget who the athlete was I was going after at the time, but I heard a bunch of people around me talking about the U.S. winning the World Cup and Brandi Chastain. And it wasn't about her celebration. It was just about the fact that she had scored the goal and the U.S. had won the World Cup. And that was the time that soccer piqued my interest because, and you, a lot of you know this, a lot of you have come to the sport recently, and part of the reason, if not all of the reason, has been watching international soccer. This U.S. Women's National Team, when they won the World Cup this last time, that was a huge moment. So many people adopted the game of soccer at that point. And for me, that moment was 1999. That World Cup victory was what piqued my interest because nothing breeds pride, nothing elevates you to star status than winning on an international stage. We love going and beating other countries. Call it, you know, maybe it's our imperialistic nature coming out a little bit. I don't know. But we love it, and we take notice. Anybody that wins. Like, do you care at all about shooting, biathlon, curling, any of these sports? You do when the Olympics roll around, and you care about if U.S. wins gold in it. You will know the names of the people from the gold medal-winning curling team, even if you don't want to admit it because that would make you look super nerdy. Now, soccer, we understand, is bigger than curling. So when a soccer team from the United States does that on the international level, we take notice and we learn the names. And maybe the next time around they play, we know about it. And we watch it if we can. And then we watch the next match. And then all of a sudden you're hooked into a sport. And that's what happened to me. And it was because of that 1999 U.S. Women's National Team World Cup victory that Tony DiCicco was was the architect of, was the coach of. So I owe my soccer fandom, and I know a lot of you out there do as well, to Tony DiCicco. And we owe him a debt of gratitude in this country when it comes to being soccer fans that I don't think can ever be paid. So obviously our thoughts and our prayers are with the family of Tony DiCicco and the U.S. soccer family as a whole. Just we owe everything in this, in the United States when it comes to soccer, to Tony DiCicco, and he will be severely missed. If you want to weigh in on any of the top four today, you can hit me up on the text line 286-0046. Coming up next, Switchbacks FC at home, San Antonio FC coming into Widener Field. I spoke to Ronnie Argueta, the skipper of the Switchbacks, yesterday on Drive Time Sports. If you missed that conversation, you will hear it next. This is The Other Football Show, presented by Switchbacks FC on Extra Sports 1300.
This is Robin Roberts.
Wrong football. This is The Other Football Show on Extra Sports 1300.
Welcome back to The Other Football Show here on Extra Sports 1300. We are presented by Switchbacks FC. Ryan Kaufman back with you on a Saturday morning. Tonight, the Switchbacks finally back at home. They are taking on San Antonio FC. Technically, it is a matchup between the second place team in the USL Western Conference and the sixth place team. But if you look, go to the USL standings, Switchbacks are pretty much in third. They're a point back. They're a point back at third. That's how tight things have gotten when it comes to three and below in the USL Western Conference. So every match is huge for the Switchbacks, and maybe none bigger than this one tonight. Of course, San Antonio and the Switchbacks played earlier in the year. Switchbacks got a pretty good result. Got a point on the road. What are we to expect tonight? Well, yesterday I spoke with the captain of the Colorado Springs Switchbacks, Ronnie Argueta, and asked him what to expect out of tonight's match. Joining us now on the program is the captain of Switchbacks FC, Ronnie Argueta, as the Switchbacks take on San Antonio FC tomorrow. Ronnie, how are you today?
Hey, Ryan, I'm doing well.
You're a Lakers fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
What'd you think about Lonzo Ball last night?
I actually didn't see it. I didn't see that. He got picked by the Lakers?
Yeah, he got picked by the Lakers. So you got you got Lonzo and LeVar Ball coming to the Lakers.
Oh man.
So let's.
I would have preferred LeBron, but.
You got to wait a year. Well, just wait a year, Ronnie, and then we'll see.
You'll have LeBron, Paul George, and probably Westbrook.
Yeah, would have preferred LeBron and Paul George, but hey, oh well.
Yeah, it takes time to build these things up. Let's talk about you guys. Tomorrow you got San Antonio coming in. I did misspeak earlier, saying that you guys were in third. But, I mean, basically you're 1 point back of that. But how big of a game is this for you guys tomorrow with San Antonio FC coming in?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge game for us. They're a really good team, you know. Top two teams. I believe they're undefeated still. So, it's a huge game for us. And I feel like we're ready to go.
But you got to feel confident, right? You mentioned that they are unbeaten, but they don't have a 100% record, and part of that is because of you guys. You went into their building at the beginning of the year and got a draw out of it. So I know time has passed and things have changed, but you got to feel confident going into tomorrow that on your home field you can take care of business.
Oh yeah, most definitely. We are confident. We feel confident coming into this game, just because of that same reason. You know, we went out there and we got a tie on the road out there, and it's definitely not easy to play. on the road, especially at San Antonio against a really good team. So, yeah, we're confident coming into this game here at home.
One of the things, Ronnie Argueta joining us here on Drive Time Sports, one of the things that will be different, I'm assuming Kevon Frater will start up top for you guys tomorrow. He certainly has been the last few games. What kind of a different dynamic has he brought to you guys?
Kevon Frater, man, he's a really good player. He holds the ball really well for us. He can take on 2-3 players, which is huge for us. Playing with one striker, one forward up top, that's what we need. We need a guy that can be strong and hold the ball for us, and that's what he brings to the table for us.
Ronnie Argueta joining us here on Drive Time Sports. We're not going to dwell on it, but you guys are coming off of a loss midweek against Swope Park Rangers. So what was lacking in that game that you guys hope that you'll fix before tomorrow?
I thought we came out and we played a good first half. We did what coach wanted us to do, and we came out of that first half up 1-0. Second half, we changed a little bit of our tactical scheme and came out a little bit more defensive. And I feel like, we would have gone after them. I think we would have came out with at least a draw, but it is what it is. And just looking forward to San Antonio now.
And I'm sure the 9 days off that you guys had before Swope Park was welcome with how banged up you guys were, but it's been even longer since you've been playing in front of the fans at Widener Field. How excited are you guys to be back in Colorado Springs playing?
Oh, we're extremely excited. We had a great training session today. The vibes were good. The team's looking good. Everybody's looking confident, so we're excited to be back home and give our fans a good game, a good showing tomorrow night.
Yeah, it would be nice to get a win in the game, because that makes the fireworks display that will happen after the game that much better.
That's right.
Yeah, you can get your tickets by logging on to SwitchbacksFC.com. Ronnie, always appreciate the time, bud, and best of luck tomorrow.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ryan. Thanks for having me, man.
You bet.
Appreciate you guys. All right.
Captain of the Switchbacks, Ronnie Argueta, joining Chris and I yesterday on Drive Time Sports. One more time, SwitchbacksFC.com is the place to get tickets. Man, fill up that place. It's going to be a gorgeous night. It's supposed to be like 65 today. Are you kidding me? It's going to be gorgeous. Fireworks after. And I heard from a little birdie that it is margarita season, which you may want to take part in while you are at Widener Field. Or don't. I'm certainly no peer pressure on this side. But should be a good match tonight. I keep saying it. I love what Kevon Frater's brought to this team. When you have Shane Malcolm, you have Mostert Kesher, you have him up top. Now if they can just get a certain member of the all whites healthy, I think they'll be dynamite. Be absolutely dynamite going forward. But expect good things tonight from the Switchbacks. Coming up next, Paul Pogba has come out with a pillow. Calls it the Pog Pillow. Because we are your source for inside information, I actually know a few other soccer stars that are getting ready to hit the market with their products. I will give you a sneak preview of those products next on The Other Football Show.
Soccer talk that hits you like a Zidane headbutt to the chest.
Oh, wow. Marco Materazzi gets crushed by Zidane.
This is The Other Football Show on Extra Sports 1300.
If you missed any week's edition of The Other Football Show, or you just want to hear it again because you like Chris and I so much, or for a very different reason, I don't know what it is, you can find us, if you follow us on social media, at Extra Sports 1300, Twitter and Facebook, soon to be coming to iTunes. I promise that is coming very soon, where you'll just get the podcast loaded onto your iPhone just automatically because hashtag technology, right? But we podcast every episode. It's a podcast re-air, basically. We take out the ads, and we give it to you for your re-listening pleasure. So make sure, if you not for the time being, if you don't follow us on social media, that's the best way to get it. But we'll let you know when we are finally up on iTunes. There's an image sizing issue that we have to get through, but we are working through it. Manchester United star Paul Pogba. You really didn't think I was going to go one episode without discussing Manchester United, did you? Of course not. Manchester United star Paul Pogba has revealed the Pog Pillow, a black pillow with his double P logo embroidered on it. If you know, if you remember, at the beginning of the season, when Manchester United was getting set to open the year, Pogba came out with his own set of emojis. So, very enterprising young man. But it is now the Pog Pillow. Certainly a departure from the normal, you know, t-shirts, boots, jackets, things like that, that soccer stars usually hawk. Well, other soccer stars are starting to follow Paul Pogba's lead here. And I have the inside scoop on some of the products that soccer stars are coming out with in very short order. The first, from the makers of Kroenke Books, the accounting software that ensures you spend just enough to make the Champions League while still having enough money to build an entire business district complete with the NFL stadium in Inglewood, California, and enough money left over so that you can finance two professional sports teams, ensuring that your son will never have to get a real job or a job that he's qualified for. The makers of Kroenke Books now give you Messi Tax, the newest and best tax software developed by Lionel Messi himself. It helps you prepare your taxes in over 20 different countries, including Spain. You know, other tax programs claim they get you the biggest refund, right? They're all out there saying that. But this no program holds a candle to Messi Tax. Take this testimonial from a user who said they only had to pay $2.8 million when they actually owed the tax man $5 million, and they didn't even have to go to prison. How about that? I don't know who that testimonial is from. I just saw it, and it said anonymous. El Messi, I think, was the testimonial there. Also, a surprising endorsement coming from Cristiano Ronaldo himself, what we thought was a rival of Lionel Messi. But hey, good tax software. Cristiano Ronaldo's not going to hate that. Cristiano Ronaldo says of Messi Tax, if I had Messi Tax, I wouldn't have been a victim of persecution. The second, I was just waiting for your laughter to subside so you could hear me. Now, you know that Proactiv seems like they just got the market cornered when it comes to skincare products, right? They have Adam Levine from Maroon 5. They have the girl that used to date Ryan Seacrest from Dancing with the Stars. They have Katy Perry, I think, endorses it. All sorts of celebrities. They've really cornered the market, and they actually have grossed, have made $1 billion on Proactiv, seizing on that opportunity to say there are more pieces of the pie available. U.S. men's national team star Christian Pulisic wants in on that action, because you can't be the hope of an entire nation at age 18 with acne. So if you wake up with a bad case of pizza face, just apply Pulisic cream and clear up those pimples and blackheads in time to make your new coach seem much better than your old coach, even though, in fact, they are about the same amount of good. P- Pulisic cream because he's young and can still have pimples at 18. And finally, the other new product that is hitting the shelves. Who needs 5 hours of energy when you can have 2 hours of energy like Chelsea manager Antonio Conte? How about this? 2 hour Conte energy. Yes, a lot of these are compound words. It's a working title. They haven't gone to market yet, so they could still tweak it. But you want 5 hours of kind of good energy, or you want 2 hours like the manager of Chelsea? You will have the energy to jump into the stands and squeeze every single player on your team after the game so hard that they file a restraining order against you while still having the mental acuity to make every right tactical decision to help your team claim the Champions League crown or the Premier League crown. 2 hour Conte energy. Kind of butchered that near the end. So yes, those three that I came up with, very not real. Well, four with Kroenke books. But the Pog Pillow is real. Seriously, the Pog Pillow is real. Google it. All right, we'll take one last break. Come back, got some Confed Cup on the slate today. I will preview it next here on Extra Sports 1300.
The referee has looked at his watch. The show is not over yet. It's stoppage time on The Other Football Show.
Ryan Kaufman back with you. Another reason why they can't go the 60-minute start and stop clock in soccer is because then what are we going to call this last segment? So, Confederations Cup today. No Germany on the slate today. So, I'm not going to play Rammstein over it, which is, I know, very disappointing for you. But we got a couple of really good matches today. New Zealand and Portugal. Well, that is Cristiano Ronaldo. The main event, though, is Mexico against the host, Russia. I would be shocked if New Zealand was able to get a result from Portugal and all Portugal needs. 1 point, 3 points, doesn't matter. As long as they don't lose, they are on to the semifinals. Same thing for Mexico. All they need is a result. Russia needs a win. So let's take Mexico-Russia in the last 3 minutes we have with you. What to expect today? Now, the running Jeff, the Mexican version of Jeff Galuli, Carlos Salcedo, is going to be out for a while after he like messed up his AC joint or something like that against New Zealand. So he's not in, not surprisingly, but he's going to be out for even longer if you're a fan of El Tri. When these two teams meet up, the draw is something that happens quite a bit. 7 times in the last 12 meetings, these two teams have drawn, and that would be good news for Mexico. Russia, to me, just looks tired. I don't know if it's just the fact that they're expending a lot of energy playing in these matches or they're feeling the pressure of Putin looking down on them, but I feel like Russia looks like a tired team, and I just don't see how they get a win out of this. Could they get a draw? Sure. They could, but I don't see Russia beating Mexico. I don't see New Zealand beating Portugal. Therefore, Portugal, Mexico, you're on to the semifinals, and then we see what happens with, it does appear it will be Chile and Germany on the other side, but Confederations Cup getting underway probably like 30 seconds from now. Tomorrow, Germany will be in action against Cameroon, Chile, and Australia. That's the problem with this Confederations Cup, right? The top line, Mexico, Russia, Portugal, Chile, Germany, there's some top-tier talent, right? Some exciting talent. But then when you're trying to worry about the drama, Germany plays Cameroon, Chile plays Australia, New Zealand plays Portugal. not a ton of drama going to be in those matches, but it will make the semifinals extremely entertaining tomorrow, I should say. So today I'm taking Portugal and Mexico. I'll take Portugal to win. I'll say Mexico and Russia draw, which still sends Mexico through to the semifinals. Tomorrow, Chile walks over Australia. Germany, same result with Cameroon. That's going to do it for the show. Want to thank Ronnie Argueta for joining us yesterday on Drive Time Sports. Of course, want to thank you, our listeners, for doing what you do best, and that is listen. Again, switchbacksfc.com. Get your tickets for the match tonight. Be at Widener Field. This is the night when San Antonio FC takes a loss, and be there to witness it. I'm Ryan Kaufman. Checkpoint Radio, talking esports and video games next on Extra Sports 1300.